straight to hell. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York, KPFA at Berkeley, KPFK in Los Angeles, and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. Our producers are Monica Lopez, Simba Russo, and Kata Mesta. Headlines editors are Nell Abram and Randy Zimmerman. Our DC editor is Mitch Jeserich. Our tech production team is Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, Mick Million, and Lindsay Benedict. We have help from Bob Stern, Arlette Cohen, Dante Toza, and Ama Bwadi. FSRN is a worker-run collective. For more information, you can visit our website at www.fsrn.org. That's www.fsrn.org. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
Portions of today's programming on WUSB were made possible by the Cinema Arts Center, 423 Park Avenue in Huntington. The Cinema Arts Center features independent, foreign, cult, and selected mainstream films. For information, their telephone number is 631-423-FILM. That's 631-423-3456.
And it's 5:58 p.m. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, and this machine is not cooperating, so I think we should just go ahead and start the program 2 minutes early, since that seems to be the theme for today. And since there's a new CD player in here, it might take me 2 minutes to figure out how to get the play button to work. Ah, it worked. Okay. It's time for Off the Wall. Okay, I think all the affiliates are with us. We started a little early, so we let the theme play a little longer. This is Off the Wall. It's 6:01 p.m. in New York. Or in the whole Eastern Seaboard, actually. On this, the 20th day of April, otherwise known as 420, which we may get into a little later. But first, there are so many important things going on in the world today, and they affect us locally. Just before I was getting gas, as is my right to do as an American, paying $2.09 per gallon. Fine, no problem at all. In fact, you know, make it $3 a gallon. I will be happy. Because I'm always going to drive something that gets good mileage, and I'll laugh at the people who get bad mileage and have to pay their life savings just to keep moving. And plus, when you look at the rest of the world, that's what the rest of the world pays too. So why should we be any better off? Apart from the fact that, you know, we're in charge of the world and all that kind of thing. But as I'm pumping my gas there, I see this thing on the pump, and I'm like, what is this? It's like a strand of material. What's it doing there? I like to know what things mean. You know, everything has a purpose. I like to just know what certain things do. And this was a yellow piece of fabric, and I looked around, and I see them in lots of places, and suddenly I realize, oh no, here we go again with the yellow ribbons. Oh God. Every 10 years or so, this country has some kind of a crisis where everybody ties yellow ribbons around anything that's sticking up out of the ground to send some kind of a message. And in this particular case, the message was that there are these poor people over there that have been taken hostage by these evil people over there. And to bring up that old Tony Orlando song, which I couldn't stand when I was a kid, and I sure can't stand now, tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree, although if you can find an oak tree on Long Island that hasn't been torn down for a mall, I guess, you know, tying it around the gas pump is an acceptable substitute. Says quite a bit, actually, when you think of it. But yeah, so they're tying yellow ribbons now around everything that you can imagine because of these people that have been taken hostage. And don't get me wrong, I totally sympathize with anyone who is taken hostage by anybody, but let's get a few terms straight to start with. You know, this whole hostage-taking thing. You know, it's a war over there. It's a war that we started. And yes, I know that the listeners of WUSB did not start the war, but we are probably Americans listening. And for those of you listening outside the country on the internet, please bear with us as we examine our own flaws here. But we started a war, okay? And when wars happen, you have bad things happen. Yes, it's true. Listen up. You have people dying. You have people getting injured. You have people having their limbs blown off and being blinded and deafened and having nightmares for the rest of their lives. And those are the winners. You know, you can imagine what happens to the people on the losing side, who have their cities decimated, who have their way of life completely destroyed, everything they own ruined, lost forever, not to mention the people that they know and care about. You know, we don't know what it's like here. Okay, we had a couple of planes fly into a couple of buildings in New York City, and that was horrible. That's a day that will live with us for the rest of our lives. But we do not know what it's like to have planes swooping over your hometown dropping bombs. We don't know what it's like to have foreign soldiers marching through the streets terrorizing the people. We don't know what that's like. That's one of the reasons why I think we should be paying more for gas, because maybe that will sort of make us realize what the rest of the world has to go through in that small sense. I don't advocate foreign troops running through the streets of Northport or something like that. Although it would be interesting. But never mind. The point is, we're very ignorant about a lot of things, and yet we claim that we know how the world should be run, how things should take place, what is right, what is wrong. And so you have the situation now where people are being captured, whether they're soldiers in uniform or soldiers not in uniform. You know, you can't really tell. There are so many people over there, mercenaries, independent security forces, contractors of all sorts. It's impossible to tell who's with the military, who is not with the military. So it's basically a free-for-all, which a lot of people predicted. It's mayhem, anarchy. And people are taken captive in such situations. So what I don't get is, how come when one of our people is taken, that's a hostage situation? Those are terrorists taking a hostage. However, in our case, we're capturing enemy combatants. I love that term. Enemy combatants. It's Bush speak. And if you listen to Mamie Abu-Jamal before on Free Speech Radio News, no matter what you think of him, he really nailed it. He really nailed Bush speak. You know, the press conference last week, did anybody watch that? Oh, you gotta watch it. Go to the White House website, okay? And you'll find a copy of it there. Just go anywhere. the guy cannot string a sentence together, for one thing. And never mind making a coherent point. That's too much to hope for. And that's the President of the United States. That's the guy who's probably the most powerful person in the world. Next to the Chairman of Disney. It makes you really think, you know, what kind of state we're in. What we're putting ourselves through. For what reasons. But I digress. Point is, you have the situation with people being taken captive in foreign lands. And there's a hypocrisy there. There's a big hypocrisy. Now, if your country was being overrun by foreign invaders, and I'm sorry, that's not a debatable point. Whether you agree with the invaders or not, Iraq is being overrun by foreign invaders, and we are the foreign invaders. And in a situation like that, you will strike out in whatever way you can, assuming you oppose the foreign invaders, which a lot of people do. And no, they're not all terrorists, and then they don't all agree with each other. But they seem to be united in that one particular argument that foreign invaders to their country is a bad thing, and they would prefer it if they left. That's pretty much what it's about at this point. So you have a situation where people strike out and do whatever they can to emphasize that point. It's very hard. It's very hard to do that when the opposing force is so strong as to be almost insurmountable. Try this. Try taking a random person, all right? And just get them really, really angry. And then show them so much force that they cannot possibly overcome. And back them into a corner. See if they maybe start to be a little irrational. Maybe they start to say things that they don't really mean. Or that are particularly hurtful and insensitive. Or maybe given the opportunity, they'll do something that does not quite abide by the rules of warfare, like stab you in the back. Whatever it takes. When people become desperate, when people become backed into a corner, they will do whatever is necessary. And that's a situation I think we're seeing throughout the world, and this righteous indignation that we show when people do things that we don't consider to be proper. We don't consider it to be following the rules. It's laughable. It's laughable to watch this unfold, to see us categorize people who are taking prisoners in their own country of foreign invaders, calling them terrorists because they don't wear uniforms or because they dare to ask for prisoners in exchange. That was the thing. They say that these are hostages and not prisoners of war because the captors were asking for prisoners in return. Now, I recall many instances in the past where there were prisoner exchanges between various countries who happened to be at war. You know, it's not that uncommon. But in this particular case, it suits us to label these people as terrorists. Who they very well might be terrorists, all right? I'm not saying they're not terrorists. They very well could be. But to just label them that way without any kind of further thought is horribly simplistic. And it gets around the bigger issue. Yeah, you know, these yellow ribbons, they should be up, but they should have been up since last year. Because we don't have just, a dozen hostages over there. We have over 100,000. 100,000 people who are over there and can't leave unless they get killed or wounded seriously. And many of them were just told that, the 1 year they spent over there, it's not going to be enough. They're going to have to spend another 90 days there. People are really reacting badly to this. You don't see that in the media anywhere, of course. That's not reported. That would undermine morale. To find out how people in the military are actually thinking and reacting to what's going on, what's happening to them. And I know there's a lot of unsympathetic people out there that say, well, they joined the military, they should, they should have expected this. Well, you know, I don't think it's that simple. There's a lot of disadvantaged people who join the military to get an education, to get some kind of a future. People who join the National Guard never dreaming that they're going to be sent overseas to fight in a war. I don't think you can really blame people for being misled. And I also think it's rather cold-hearted to just dismiss people so quickly. It's the same mentality that says, well, he committed a crime by jaywalking, so therefore he belongs in prison. You know, there were people like that. There used to be a few people like that. Now there are a lot of people like that. It's the simplistic attitude. Well, this person did this, so therefore they deserve that. No questions asked, no thinking necessary. So, we have a lot of people over there who are stuck over there. And I think we all share the blame. We all share the guilt in not doing enough to get them out. I'm looking at polls in the papers that say that more people are supporting sending more troops over there, under the mistaken belief that that's going to somehow relieve the people that are there now by bringing more of them over. When in actuality, it's most likely simply going to make more people into widows and cripples and whatever happens during horrible situations like this. This week, Spain and Honduras pledged to pull all of their troops out. Now, you may not think that's very significant. Honduras only had a few hundred people. But it is, because it represents the first crack in this, actually, not the first crack, but a significant crack in this so-called coalition of George W. Bush's. And the new Spanish government, yes, they're socialists. they never fail to mention that, as if that is somehow relevant. Basically, they represent the people, and the people want their troops the hell out of there. And the government has enough integrity to actually follow through on a promise they made. So Spain, a lot of people are going to be pulling out. I'm not sure exactly how many troops they have there, but it's a significant crack. It really is. And it's something that the United States really should take a good look at. As far as wondering how much support we actually have. So what happens? Okay, the United States pulls its troops out. The country is left in anarchy. That's, that's pretty much the argument that's given. And it's probably correct. If all troops were to be pulled out, yes, there would be mayhem and civil war, probably. And the United States is 100% responsible for that. So like I said before, I think the only solution is to turn this over to the United Nations and spend whatever it takes to get that country back on its feet again without the use of our soldiers, who obviously are not welcome in the streets over there. So it becomes a world issue, something the UN can work on, but they don't have to spend any money on it because as a penalty for what we did, we'll cover the whole thing. Of course, that will never happen because that will involve us admitting that we were wrong and that invading other countries is not a good thing. See, we live in a world now where the so-called good side believes it can act like the so-called bad side and use the same tactics. Israel uses targeted assassinations now. They don't blink an eye. Yeah, well, you know, he was going to kill us, so we killed him first. And yeah, we killed a few people that were standing around them. Fired a rocket into a crowd of people. Well, it had to be done. We had to protect our people. God, what a vile place that has turned into. I remember, you know, growing up, Israel was considered a nice place. And now it's horrible. Look what it's turned into. Look at the people, the madmen running that place. I mean, it's... You can rank it with the worst regimes in the world. At this point, as far as I'm concerned, you really can, because anything seems to be possible. Torture, imprisonment. You know, they're releasing the guy today who revealed the fact that Israel had a nuclear bomb under development. Hailed by the rest of the world as somebody who revealed a potentially serious threat to world security. Something the rest of the world has the right to know. Isn't that what we're saying all the time? We want to know who has nuclear bombs? And, you know, there should be some kind of standards. There should be some kind of accountability. Well, Israel does not agree with that. And they imprisoned this guy for 18 years, 12 years of which were in solitary confinement. Can you imagine that? 12 years in solitary confinement for revealing the fact that your country has a nuclear weapons program, something that Israel has always denied. Obviously, it's hard for them to deny it if they're imprisoning people for revealing it. But they did it anyway, this so-called democratic state. And now the guy's being released, and he's being told that he cannot travel, he cannot speak to foreigners, all these rules and regulations to ensure that the rest of the world never finds out the truth, and also to intimidate him for the rest of his life. This guy's life was destroyed simply to reveal the truth. It's pathetic, it really is. And, you know, you can say people are innocent, but I'm beginning to believe people really aren't as innocent as they're given credit for by default. For instance, people in the United States, we share an amount of guilt for what's going on in the world because we're not doing enough to stop it. Yeah, we have rallies every now and then. We hear the same people speak. But how many of us do anything beyond that? How many vigils are going on? How many 24-hour, 7-day-a-week rallies and vigils and sit-ins or whatever are going on? Not enough. Not nearly enough. Obviously, it's not working. And, you know, we put these people into power. We put these people into power, and they feel they have the right to do the things that they do. And they don't. Anybody check out CNN? This was actually last Monday on CNN. If you go to the fair.org website, there's a really good piece, which I'm going to be part of here, on CNN interviewing reporters from Al Jazeera, Al Jazeera being the news agency based in Qatar. That's how I pronounce it. I don't know if other people pronounce it Qatar or whatever. You know, there's other ways to pronounce the country, but I pronounce it Qatar, and that's what I'm going to do. Anyway, as the casualties mount in the besieged Iraqi city of Fallujah, Qatar-based Al Jazeera has been one of the only news networks broadcasting from the inside, relaying images of destruction and civilian victims, including women and children. Oh, yes, it's true. You may not know that by looking at American media, but lots of women and children have died as a result of American action. Or reaction, if you want to call it that. I believe today, in fact, it was revealed that over 1,000 people had been killed on the other side. Many of them civilians, and that was revealed by the United States military. Now, continuing, when CNN anchor Darren Kagan interviewed the network's editor-in-chief, Ahmed Al-Sheikh, on Monday, April 12th, it was a rare opportunity to get independent information about events in Fallujah. However, she used the occasion to badger Al-Sheikh about whether the civilian deaths were really, quote, the story, unquote, in Fallujah. Al Jazeera has recently come under sharp criticism from U.S. officials who claim the Iraqi casualties are 95% military-age males. That's according to the Associated Press. We have reason to believe that several news organizations do not engage in truthful reporting, CPA spokesman Dan Senior said. In fact, it is no reporting. Senior military spokesman Mark Kimmett had a suggestion for Iraqis who saw civilian deaths on Al Jazeera. Change the channel to a legitimate, authoritative, honest news station. The stations that are showing Americans intentionally killing women and children are not legitimate news sources. That is propaganda, and that is lies. That is lies? You see, it's spreading. It's spreading. Bush speak. Those are lies. That is lies. This is a dream, right? Someone pinch me, please. I mean, they're scary enough without being illiterate, but just add the illiteracy in it and it becomes, you know, this weird farce. All right. Acting as the substitute anchor on CNN's Wolf Blitzer reports, Kagan began the interview by asking Al-Sheikh to respond to those accusations, citing U.S. officials, quote, saying the pictures and the reporting that Al Jazeera put on the air only adds to the sense of frustration and anger and adds to the problems in Iraq rather than helping to solve them, unquote. After Al-Sheikh defended Al Jazeera's work as accurate and the images as representative of what takes place on the ground, Kagan pressed on. Listen to this. Isn't the story, though, bigger than just the simple numbers? With all due respect to the Iraqi civilians who have lost their lives, the story bigger than just the numbers of people who were killed or the fact that they might have been killed by the U.S. military, that the insurgents, the people trying to cause problems within Fallujah, are mixing in among the civilians, making it actually possibly that even more civilians would be killed, that the story is what the Iraqi insurgents are doing in addition to what is the response from the U.S. military. Well, that was phrased kind of interestingly, too. Anyway, CNN's argument that a bigger story than civilian deaths is what the Iraqi insurgents are doing to provoke a U.S. response is startling, especially in light of official U.S. denials of civilian deaths. Video footage of women and children killed by the U.S. military is evidence that needs to be seen. And Al Jazeera is not alone in reporting a reality very different from the one U.S. officials describe. Authorities have been able to keep a tight rein on the information flow from Fallujah, with only one small television network pool in the city that travels and operates under the watch of the Marines. It's noteworthy that the U.S. has reportedly demanded, as a condition for lifting the siege of Fallujah, that Al Jazeera cameras be removed from the city. But independent journalists reporting from Fallujah have described a scene consistent with the one broadcast by Al Jazeera. Rahul Mahajan, a U.S. journalist in Fallujah, estimated that of the 600 Iraqis killed in Fallujah, 200 were women and 100 young children, with many of the adult male casualties also non-combatants. He reported witnessing a young woman, 18 years old, shot in the head, and a young boy with massive internal bleeding at a clinic. Mahajan recounted that during the ceasefire, Americans were attacking with heavy artillery, but primarily with snipers, with ambulances among the targets. The sniper activity was also reported by U.S. journalist Dar Jamal, who said Fallujah residents say Marines are opening fire randomly on unarmed civilians and have attacked clearly marked ambulances. When reports from the ground are describing hundreds of civilians being killed by U.S. forces, CNN should be looking to Al Jazeera's footage to see if it corroborates those accounts, not badgering Al Jazeera's editor about why he doesn't suppress that footage. And there's a call on FARA.org to tell CNN that there is no bigger story in Fallujah than the deaths of civilians. Asks the network to report the reality of the siege, including eyewitness accounts and video footage shot by non-embedded journalists, before dismissing civilian victims as the responsibility of the resistance. www.fair.org, you can find that and a whole lot of other interesting things going on there. And, you know, Al Jazeera is something that is very controversial, but you need alternate voices. You need voices that are there. They should not be looked upon with such hostility. Maybe a little suspicion, sure. Any media outlet should be looked upon with suspicion. But come on already. These guys are the media. You look at many different types of media. And by many different types, I do not mean Fox, MSNBC, and CNN, because they're all the same. NBC, CBS, ABC, they all are the same. Even if you watch them at, say, 7:15 in the morning, they're all doing the same thing at the same time. You know, they're duplicates of each other. Watch something with a little bit of a difference. I know in this country you can't really do that. There are a couple of alternatives. You can watch, I think C-SPAN airs some foreign newscasts. I think they air The National from CBC. So you can watch it in this country if you don't get Canadian TV. News World International is a channel that many people are able to get now. And that's a great channel because they show news from all around the world. However, I have heard disturbing reports that that is soon going to be stopped. You can't have that. You can't have alternative news. What will the people think? And on the front page of Fox News Channel, which you can go to at foxnews.com, under a section which is called Only on Fox, and I think that's rightfully so. Al Jazeera always on the scene. Some wonder if Arabic News Network is willing partner in anti-U.S. campaign. Well, I'll tell you this. You know, all the American networks are willing accessories to the military. There's no question about that. Did you see when they grabbed this guy, the contractor? I hesitate to say hostage. I really do, because that word is being misused. When he was taken prisoner, because that works either way, his face was blocked out. Now, every other prisoner we've seen, the Japanese, the Russians, the Chinese, We've always seen them. But this particular guy, all the media apparently agreed to block out his face. I guess, you know, until they could track down his family and tell them. But it was easy to find out what his name was because it was being reported in the foreign media. So one has to wonder, you know. That request was made by somebody and honored by everybody. And then all of a sudden it was lifted and you could see the guy's full face and everything. But there's that kind of control. Whether or not it was right or wrong to do that, I could see, you know, not wanting to reveal the person's face before his relatives knew about it. It just goes to show how tight the control is and how willing every network is to play ball. Anyway, taking a look at this Fox News story. And yes, keep in mind, it's Fox News, all right? So don't throw anything at the radio. Al Jazeera's ubiquitous presence at news events in Iraq has some wondering whether the Arabic satellite news network is a willing or even enthusiastic partner in the anti-American campaign being waged by Iraqi insurgents. Yes, some are wondering. Who are these some, I wonder? Said to be the most watched Arabic network, available in 53 million homes around the world, Al Jazeera promotes itself as independent and professional with journalistic integrity. Kind of like Fox, huh? Yeah. It often has the first video of hostages, including the Italian security guard who was killed on camera last week. The network also regularly airs footage of roadside bombs going off and other attacks on coalition forces, leading some to wonder if their crews are being tipped off in advance. Last week, when Al Jazeera reported that hundreds of thousands of civilians had been killed by U.S. forces in Fallujah, hundreds of thousands? I don't think they have hundreds of thousands of people there. That might be a translation issue. Hundreds of thousands? All right, if Al Jazeera said that, obviously, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but somehow I really doubt it. And it was revealed today that over 1,000 people were killed, so if it was hundreds or thousands, I could definitely see that. Anyway, someone can find an Al Jazeera report that said hundreds of thousands of civilians have been killed in Fallujah. I'd sure like to see it. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld called it vicious, inaccurate, outrageous, and inexcusable. What made him stop at four? You know, why not keep going? Vicious, inaccurate, outrageous, and inexcusable. I guess that pretty much covers it all. The U.S.-led coalition says it has documented 34 instances last week alone of Al Jazeera hyping, misreporting, or distorting events in Iraq. Gee, I wonder if that beats Fox. They usually get above 50 at least, right? Media experts say the coalition's criticism is valid, and critics say the network may be fanning the flames of hatred against the United States. But representatives from Al Jazeera say the network abides by the rules, acting as professionally as possible, in an Arab world not always accustomed to freedom of expression. Al Jazeera said it would be censorship not to run videos of Westerners being killed and deny it is in bed with the insurgents. Even the defense that they print has this mocking tone to it, you know? It would be censorship not to run videos of Westerners being killed. How many such videos exist in the first place? Anyway, you can go to Al Jazeera's website. I'm going to try to go to it right now, in fact, if our internet service is cooperative. Yeah, it'll start all kinds of flags, I'm sure, on our service here, but you know, you got to do things like that. Yes, you can go to aljazeera.net, but you know, you're going to get scared because you'll see Arabic, and you might not understand it, and it's just not a good idea to go to a public library, say, and leave all the terminals connected to aljazeera.net. I would never recommend doing that because librarians will have heart attacks and federal authorities will be called and all kinds of things will happen. But yes, aljazeera.net is reachable, of course. The site you want, though, is english.aljazeera.net. And Al Jazeera, of course, is spelled A-L-J-A-Z-E-E-R-A. Now listen to these biased stories that they're running here. Several fighters killed in Fallujah. U.S. Marines have killed 8 fighters in the Iraqi town of Fallujah, while 21 people died when the resistance fired mortar rounds at a U.S.-held detention facility in Baghdad. That's pretty biased there, isn't it? Well, I guess they call them resistance. Can't do that. You have to call them terrorists or insurgents. All right. Well, check that site out. See what you think of it. I'm sure there's bias. There's bias in every bit of media there is. I'm even told that people can detect bias in my voice sometimes on this particular radio program. I don't see it. I don't understand it, but apparently some people can detect that kind of a thing. Okay, speaking of what's going on over there, the good guys versus the bad guys, did you see this story about the Saudi television host? She publicly showed her bruised and bloodied face and has shocked her compatriots into openly talking about one of the kingdom's long-hidden problems, violence against women. Rania Albaz has been hailed as a hero for letting newspaper photographers snap pictures of her face and for frankly discussing her case after she said a beating by her husband earlier this month left her unconscious. Her story has been widely reported in the Saudi media. A Saudi princess stepped forward to pay Albaz's medical bills. Representatives of the new Saudi National Human Rights Association visited her in the hospital. Albaz is well known throughout the kingdom for her chatty magazine-style show, The Kingdom This Morning. The program usually offers lighter fare and is shown on state-run Saudi Channel 1. Albaz's television persona, warm smile wrapped in a stylish headscarf, made the photographs of her wrecked face after the April 10th beating all the more startling. She suffered 13 facial fractures, requiring 12 operations. She wanted her case to be publicized so that other battered women would be encouraged to speak up, according to the Arab News. And the thing is, over there, this kind of a thing is very, very common. After banging her head on the floor and the wall until she lost consciousness, Albaz said her husband drove her to the hospital and left her at the front doors, claiming she was a victim of a traffic accident and that he was going to pick up others who had been hurt. He then drove off and has not been seen or heard from since. There are no statistics available on wife abuse in the kingdom, but husbands rarely meet disapproval for reforming spouses deemed disobedient by hitting them. There are hundreds of other abused women who nobody hears about. And Saudi women need to be accompanied by a male guardian, even if they want to go to the police to report abuse. Can you imagine that? Can't go to the police without a male guardian. They also aren't allowed to vote. They're not allowed to travel. And they're not allowed to drive. And those are our allies, the Saudi regime. Yeah, you gotta wonder. Gotta wonder about these things. And Time magazine has published its list of the 100 world's most influential people, including President George W. Bush, which it called a radical gambler. Saying the Republican president will be judged by the Iraq War, columnist Andrew Sullivan wrote, "We do know that this unassuming man became a radical gambler with his fate and with humanity's." That is something. Time magazine. Meanwhile, Vice President Dick Cheney portrayed President Bush and himself as champions of the Second Amendment and Democratic candidate John Kerry as a potential threat to gun owners in a speech at the National Rifle Association's 133rd annual convention on Saturday. The Vice President of the United States, these are the people that that he believes are the most important audience for him right now. Gun owners. Think about that. No matter what you feel about guns, you know, that's the crowd that he gravitates towards. When's the last time you saw Cheney give a speech, you know, to any group of people? Any group of people. It's so rare to see him in public. As if, you know, guns in this country are something that are in danger. I mean, really, think about it. John Kerry's approach to the Second Amendment has been to regulate, regulate, and then regulate some more, Cheney said, citing votes against legislation that would protect gun makers from lawsuits and in favor of allowing federal authorities to randomly inspect gun dealers without notice. Cheney lauded the NRA for its safety programs and said the best way to prevent gun crimes was to enforce existing laws, which he was probably opposed to when they were put into effect. Federal prosecutions of crimes committed with guns increased 68% under President Bush, he told the crowd. Well, if that had been Kerry, I'm sure he would be telling the crowd something different. Bush has shown you respect, earned your vote, and appreciate your support, Cheney said. He spoke for about 25 minutes after he was greeted by a standing ovation, punctuated by chants of four more years. He ducked the federal assault weapons ban, which expires in September, and which the NRA maintains has been ineffective. We need more federal weapons, assault weapons out there. We need more of them. Yeah. Kerry, in a statement issued before Cheney's address, said most voters don't know that Bush and Cheney are standing against major police organizations and breaking their promise to renew the assault weapons ban, which helps keep military-style assault weapons out of the hands of criminals and terrorists. Yeah, but Kerry, what you don't understand is that all those law-abiding citizens are also being denied the right to have military-style assault weapons. I mean, you know, if you bring up a family and go to church and, you know, drive an American car, why shouldn't you have a military-style assault weapon? You know, it doesn't add up. And these are the issues that really affect people, right? These are the things that matter. All this nonsense overseas. That's overseas. Who cares? Tie some yellow ribbons around some gas posts and let's get our assault weapons out. Here's the really disturbing part of this whole thing, though. If that wasn't disturbing enough. Earlier that day, Tom Mouser, that's the guy whose son Daniel was killed with an assault weapon in the Columbine High School killings 5 years ago to this day. He tried to enter the convention hall where the NRA was meeting. The guy whose son was killed at Columbine. He wanted to urge Cheney to support extending the assault weapons ban. And you know what happened? He was turned away. He was not allowed to go inside. People who disagree are not allowed inside. What the hell kind of people are these, anyway? And it gets worse. He was turned away by a security guard as several conventioners applauded. Guy has his son killed, and they're applauding the fact that he's being turned away from a convention and not allowed the right to speak, something that obviously has affected him very intensely. And some of them even yelled, "Get a life and vote for Bush." It's sick, it really is. You have to wonder what kind of people these are. I'm sure there are some very nice people in there, but you got to look at how it's being represented. Take a good long look. I mean, that's what we have to do with our country, that's what we have to do with our government, and that's what I think we have to do with any organization that we find ourselves affiliated with. And that kind of a thing, that kind of treatment of people, that kind of disregard for some well-worded opposition, it's something that I think we just need to regard very seriously. Some of the words that he would have said, this is what he said to the press after he was turned away from the convention. "What is the useful purpose to these weapons? They are the weapons of gangs, drug lords, and sick people. It is a weapon of war, and we don't want this war on our streets." He called the NRA an organization with a Field and Stream magazine membership, but a Soldier of Fortune magazine leadership. And, you know, nowhere in there do I see him saying guns should be banned, which is what anybody in favor of gun control is accused of saying, you know? Even Michael Moore, with his Bowling for Columbine film, did not call for banning guns. I still see him being accused of that. I guess people don't watch the film or something. It's nuts. So yeah, Columbine, 5 years ago today, and this is the period of time where there are all these crazy anniversaries. Yesterday was the anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing. And it was also the anniversary of the Waco tragedy, where they all went up in flames. Today is the anniversary of Columbine. And it's also Hitler's birthday. Did you know that? It's not a very pleasant period of time here. And spring! Spring is here! Yeah, it's a month late, I know, but it hit us full in the face here in New York. But also we have this this weird date known as 420. April 20th, 420. That's how we say it here in the States. Month first, then the date. And apparently it has something to do with marijuana. Yes, that's right. And a lot of people ask the question, well, what does 420 actually mean? Where did it come from? Where did those weird words or numbers come into play? How did this happen? Well, I guess the best thing you could do is go to www.420.com, and you'll find a site there talking about all these issues, about marijuana and April 20th and 420 and all that kind of a thing. Advertisements for High Times Grow America, the new Bible for the cannabis cultivator and connoisseur. A call to celebrate April 20th with a comprehensive look at the underground phenomenon and an events calendar. Let's first explain what 420.com is. High Times stakes out its stoner space on the web at 420.com, a spin-off of our new Grow America newsstand title, fully optimized for high-minded readers, I love it. 420.com compiles High Times' best information on cannabis cultivation, including the authoritative Grow Q&A database and Max Yields Grow Journal, along with a gallery of luscious bud shots and fun stuff like Chef Ra's Random Munchie Generator. What started out as an underground phenomenon, an unofficial tea time for smoking pot, 420, has emerged as a lifestyle unto itself. So you have all kinds of things on that website, along with things going on. Let's take a look at the calendar of events. April 20th, BBQ Bash, www.nightrocker.com in San Antonio, Texas, a second annual concert and barbecue in San Antonio. I don't know if what they'll be smoking over there, if anything. Cypress Hill 420 show, Henry Fonda Music Box Theater, Hollywood, California, an annual 420 tradition. And, well, this is probably too late. 4 p.m. in Boulder, Colorado. Smoke and sit in on the campus at the University of Colorado. Well, I guess it might still be going on, or they might be beating them by now, police moving in. But here's one there's still time for if you're in. Where is this? I'm not sure where this is. They don't say. It's 1725 Columbia Road Northwest. Oh, it's in Washington, D.C. Okay. The 420 Festival is back. Starts at 8 p.m. It's a fundraiser to boost hemp legalization. The 420 Festival returns to Washington, D.C. this year, featuring The Ordinary Way, Indica Jones, a silent auction, and guest speakers. Admission, well, we're not going to mention the price because we don't do that here. But all proceeds will fund the 35th annual smoke-in and benefit the 4th of July Hemp Coalition. And there's all kinds of other events going on. The Normal Conference taking place April 22nd through 24th in Washington, D.C. Go to www.normal.org. Normal without the A. And here's a brief definition of what 420 is all about. Comes from the site that dispels urban legends, Snopes.com, S-N-O-P-S.com. The claim is that 420 entered drug parlance as a term signifying the time to light up a joint. That, my friends, is true. Odd terms sneak into our language every now and then, and this is one of the oddest. Everyone who considers himself in the know about the drug subculture has heard that 420 has something to do with illegal drug use, but when you press them, they never seem to know why, or even what the term supposedly signifies. It's both more and less than people make it out to be. 420 began its sub rosa linguistic career in 1971 as a bit of slang casually used by a group of high school kids at San Rafael High School in California. You see, kids? Your high school can change the language. You just gotta, stick with it. 420, always pronounced 420. I'm sorry, okay. From now on, I'll get it right. I'm used to area codes. 420, never 420. Came to be an accepted part of the argot within that group of about a dozen pot smokers. beginning as a reminder of the time they planned to meet to light up, 4:20 p.m. Keep in mind, this wasn't a general call to all dope smokers everywhere to toke up at 20 past 4 every day. It was 12 kids who'd made a date to meet near a certain statue. It's thus incorrect to deem that 4:20 originated as a national or international dope smoking time, even though the term began as a reference to a particular time of day. These days, 4:20 is used as a generic way of declaring one likes to use marijuana, or just as a term for the substance itself, its earliest connotation of having to do with the time a certain group of students congregated to smoke wacky tobacco is unknown to the overwhelming majority of those who now employ the term. Indeed, most instead believe one or more of the many spurious explanations that have since grown up about this much-abused short form. Listen to these. 4:20 is the penal code section for marijuana use in California. No! Section 4:20 of the California Penal Code refers to obstructing entry on public land. The penal codes of other states list different entries for 4:20, but none of them matches anything having to do with marijuana. So just strike that. Next, it's the Los Angeles or New York Police Radio Code for Marijuana Smoking in Progress. It's not the police radio code for anything, let alone that. Next, it's the number of chemical compounds in marijuana. The number of chemical compounds in marijuana is 315, which is the area code for, I think, Syracuse, or is it Rochester? I'm not sure, okay? But anyway, it's got nothing to do with any of this. April 20th is the date that Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, or Janis Joplin died. Though these performers were strongly identified with drug use during their brief lifetimes, and the emerging drug culture after their demises, none of them kicked the bucket on April 20th. Morrison died on July 3rd, Hendrix on September 18th, and Joplin on October 4th. Next, the 20th of April is the best time to plant marijuana. There's no one best time. That answer would change from one part of the country to another, or even from one country to another. Albert Hoffman took the first deliberate LSD trip at 4:20 on April 19th, 1943. Well, this was indeed the case. His lab notes back this up, but this wasn't the start of 4:20. It's just an oddball coincidence. And that was his first deliberate LSD trip. His first accidental LSD trip took place on April 16th, 1943. When the Grateful Dead toured, they always stayed in room 4:20. Untrue, says Grateful Dead production spokesman Dennis McNally. All right, well, now you have all the facts you could possibly want to know about 4:20, which it is. Today's date is the 20th day of the fourth month. And you don't get that overseas because they have the date come first, then the month. There's no 20th month with a fourth day, so you just don't get to have the fun, I guess. But one thing we can do to share this momentous event with you is resume what many readers have been writing in to ask about. We were busy the last few weeks with fundraising, and plus we played a whole bunch of them beforehand, so we weren't doing Tommy Chong tributes. We're going to do one tonight. It's a short one, but we are paying tribute to Tommy Chong because he is still in prison for selling bongs on the internet, due to be released, I think, in about 2 months. Horrible miscarriage of justice. Not much we can do about it except try to get people aware. And playing some of the old material is one way to do that. Here's Tommy Chong.
Good morning, and how's our big, brave motorcycle rider today, huh? Mm-hmm. Not too good, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, I got some news that ought to cheer you up. We're going to take a look at your wounds and see how they're doing. Mm. That's right. We're going to take off all that tape. Mm-hmm. It makes you happy, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's going to be quite a job, too, because you must have at least 5 miles of tape on you. Mm-hmm. Okay, fella. Well, just settle down. This won't hurt. Nurse, better hold his hands. Yeah, orderly, hold his feet. Hold him down. Now, settle down, fella. Settle down. This isn't going to hurt now. Come on. You're a big, brave motorcycle rider, aren't you? That's right. Okay, let's have a look at him. Oh, that wasn't so bad, was it now, huh? Okay, come on. Just a little more. There we go. There we go. A little bit more. There we go.
Okay. One more. Here we go. Nurse, I thought you were supposed to shave him before we put this tape on. Okay. How's that, fella? Better, huh? Okay. Snuck that one in on you, didn't I? Okay, let's have a look. Now, does it hurt when I do this? And when I do this? It does, doesn't it? Little tender there, is it? How about right here? How about here? How about this? How about this? How about Gucci, 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 Gucci? All right, nurse. Tape him up again.
Well, that was certainly a lot of fun, wasn't it? Tommy Chong there on WUSB. Let's take some phone calls in the couple of minutes we have left. 631-632-WUSB. Those of you listening over the radio, obviously, will hear that a lot quicker than those of you listening over the internet, where it takes a couple of minutes. So you have the advantage, and you might not even have to dial the area code. 632-9872 is our phone number. 631 area code. Boy, it's confusing even to me. And I supposedly know about this this stuff. If you have any comments about what's been talked about tonight or anything else. Tommy Chong there from the Wedding album with the other tapes, I believe that's called. They wrote it in script, so it's very hard to make out. But boy, yeah, that's what's going on. Tommy Chong languishing in prison for selling bongs on the internet while the rest of the world goes to hell in a handbasket. And boy, is it really for doing that. I printed out the news before I got here, and I then promptly lost it. Oh, here it is. No calls? Nobody's out there? That's hard to believe. Okay, internet people, you should be getting the message about now. Well, actually, you're getting the first message about now. So, you'll hear this message in about 2 minutes. All right, and hopefully take some phone calls. 631-632-9872. We only have about 2 minutes. So if you're going to call in, you better do it soon. Let's take a look at the news. A roadside bomb in the Iraqi city of Mosul is blamed for the 100th U.S. combat death this month. And, we went over 700 overall. You know, I'm sick of Iraq. I really am. Even I'm tired of talking about it now. Let's see if there's anything else. What else is going on in the news? A spokesman for the Iraqi National Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is disputing part of Bob Woodward's new book, Plan of Attack. It's the part that describes a meeting involving Vice President Cheney. It's about Iraq, too. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
How's it going, man?
How you doing? What's on your mind?
I just want to ask him, I'm confused about the term Iraqi civilians and Iraqi insurgents.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know there was any kind of organized. I thought they were all civilians. Some of them just happened to be pissed off that we were in their neighborhood.
Yeah, well, I imagine a lot of them probably are pissed off that we're in the neighborhood. And
somebody explain why there is a distinction between insurgents and civilians. I mean, are we fighting a legitimate army?
No, I don't think we're fighting a quote-unquote legitimate army. I think we're fighting a bunch of people that are fighting for their country, you know.
Exactly.
If an army came over here to Long Island and invaded, I think a lot of us would be in the streets and we wouldn't have full military uniforms. We'd just be fighting with whatever we had, and that would involve blowing things up.
I think the uniform would probably be Yankee t-shirts.
You know, that's a good uniform.
That's a great uniform.
That's not a bad idea when the armies do come at some point.
He egged us on. He said, call. I called.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Later.
All right. Why do you keep referring to me in the third person? That's kind of weird. All right. Let's see if anyone else is out there. 632-9872. We only have about a minute, so if you're going to call, do it now. And if you're on the internet, well, you probably heard this too late. Let's see. What else is going on? A spokeswoman jokes that John Kerry's campaign is auditioning for the number 2 spot on the ticket. Yeah, I'd like to know who people think would be the best candidate here. And, you know, if you don't get to call us, you can always write to us, otw@2600.com. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing?
What's on your mind?
I was just curious. I heard you talking about Iraq. I was wondering what happened to John Walker Lynn.
That's a good question. He's languishing in prison somewhere. He was the enemy combatant found with the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Yeah, he was the evil traitor of the United States, and nobody's heard anything about him. You know, everybody's so angry that he was such a traitor, and now, you know, he just disappeared, kind of. I also wanted to ask you a question. Who do you think would win in a steel cage match? George W. Bush or Saddam Hussein? Maybe we could settle the whole thing that way.
Well, you know, I would like to hear Saddam Hussein's English. I wonder if it might be better than George W. Bush's. Let's try that first. Thanks thanks for your call. Good evening, you're on.
Hi, I just called in on your talk show here, you know?
Oh, you're calling a second time. You know, you're speaking on the talk show.
Huh?
You're speaking on the talk show right now.
Am I?
Yes, your voice is going out over the airwaves.
Oh, okay, listen, I just wanted to bring up one thing you were talking about before, about, you know, the prisons are sending over more troops.
You have 30 seconds.
And what clicked back to me was the fact that back right after Kennedy got shot, Lyndon Johnson escalated the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's what you have to wonder. Anyway, that's our show for tonight. I want to thank everybody for calling in and for listening and for being a part of the process, because that's what it's all about.